We're finishing up here on Daf Pei Aleph Amud Beis, and then we'll start in Mitzvah Hashem the Daf for today, which is Pei Beis Amud Aleph. So if you take a look about six lines up before the end, Mike Shofim. We had a whole discussion about those pieces of pottery which were used and shouldn't be used for the following reason: to wipe after elimination, because if there's leftover shirayim of feces on this shard, then a witch, a machashefa, could get hold of it and spook out that person. So Mike Shofim ki hadar Rav Chisda. The Gemara tells the story about Rabba Barav Huna Havika Azli Be'arva. They were traveling on a boat. Amro Lehu Hahi Machanusa. There was a noble woman, a very important woman amongst the non-Jews, and she demanded Osvin Bahadachayhu. Give me a seat on the ship. Vlosvu. And they refused to do so. The Gemara doesn't tell us why. We can come up with a few guesses. Amra ihi milsa. So she recited some sort of an incantation, what we call a lachash, a spell. And she was successful. Asarta li arva. Arva is a ship. And she was able to freeze the ship, and it couldn't move. Amru inu milsa. So the chachamim who were on the boat, they also had a spell, some sort of a lachash, and they were able to neutralize halachash and charyuha, and they freed the ship. So the ship is now ready to travel on the seas. Amr lahu, she made a desperate comment. She says, ma i'evid lahu, what can I do against you? In other words, anything I try, you're always successful. You can counter my sorcery. And here we start the daf for today, Pei Beis Amud Aleph. And delo mekanech lechu b'chaspa, if I were to look and try to find little pieces of pottery shards that you use to wipe up after elimination, I can't find any, because you don't use that. You don't expose yourself to the spells of a witch. Velo kata lechu kina amanachayhu. And another way that a machshefa, a sorcerer, could get to someone and put a spell on them is if they kill a kina is called a louse in English, while it's on their clothing. And the Jewish people are very careful. First they shake off the louse from the clothing, and then they kill the louse. And v'lo sholif l'chu yarka v'ochel l'chu mikisha di'aser gina. There's another way that sorcerers could have an impact and put a spell on a person. When you have a bundle of vegetables, a certain vegetables that after you harvest them, you immediately tie them up in bundles. For example, you have green onions, or you have garlic, leeks, other such vegetables that are tied up in bundles. And if a person pulls one vegetable out of this bundle, then he exposes himself to the impact of sorcery. But you never do that. You're very careful. You know the ins and outs of witchcraft. And therefore what you do is you take apart the bundle, and then you take out a piece. Once you loosen and untie the bundle, then the witches can't get to you. In any event, we see one thing from this story about the witch that we have to derive for our Gemara, and that is that it's not a good idea to use a broken piece of pottery to wipe oneself, and that for two reasons. First of all, it's dangerous, it's very sharp, and it could injure the rectal opening, and number two, it exposes a person to witchcraft. Amalei Rav Huna l'Rabba Bray. Rav Huna asked his son Rabba, my timer, why is it Lo shchicha kami de Rav Chisda? You don't show up to hear the Torah and study at the footsteps, at the feet of Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda, the Mechadid in Shmaita, he's very sharp in his understanding of Shmaita means sugyas. You have a great deal to learn with him, and yet I see that you're hesitant, you're inhibited. Amalei, so Rabbah turns to his father in response, and he says, "My, what do you want? Ezel legabe, I should go to Rav Chisda? Dechi azilna legabe, whenever I go to study by him, he doesn't teach me any Torah. Mosively b'mili di'alma. Mili di'alma means he talks to me about things that are mundane, that are down to earth. I come to learn Torah by him, and he's not teaching Torah. And I'll give you an example of things that I heard from Rav Chisda when I came to learn by him. Amali, he said to me, Man di oil beis hakise lo lesiv behedi. He instructed me regarding elimination in a bathroom. And he told me I should not sit down with a force. I should sit down quietly. V'lo litrach tfei. And if I'm having trouble getting the feces out of my body, eliminating, I should not push it. The high karkashta, he taught me that the rectal opening, atlas shine yosef, it's structured over three teeth. What are these teeth? These are different rectal muscles that are shaped a little bit like teeth. That's why they're called teeth. And dilma mishtamta shine dekarkashta. If you rush, you know, forcefully to sit down and eliminate, or if you push it too hard, then you might actually dislocate these teeth of the rectum, which is very dangerous. Osili de sakana. You might endanger your life. And Rashi offers a couple of interpretations why this is so dangerous. For one thing, Rashi tells us that if you sit down too forcefully, it could cause the rectal opening to open wider than it should, and the muscles become weak and sometimes even tear, and as a result the rectum itself could start protruding out of the anal opening. And not only that, it could cause obstructions in the rectum and make it impossible to eliminate, and that's going to cause infection. Terrible. Amaliso, Rav Huna responds to his son Rava, and he says, as we say in Yiddish, Pungfaket, just the opposite. This is the reason why I want you to go study by Rav Chisda, who Osik Bechaye de Briyasa. He's teaching you about the very Chayim of God's creations, life and death. Viat Amrit Bemili di Alma? And you're very casual about it. You say, oh, he's only teaching me about the physical universe. He's saving your life. He's giving you the wisdom of ages. Kolshkein zil legabei. On the contrary, that's all the more reason why you should go study at the feet of Rav Chisda. He will teach you that which is so critical to your life. Now, for the rest of this Mishnah, until we get to the last Mishnah in the Perek, the Gemara is going to analyze various choices that you have to use as, you know, instead of toilet paper, which they didn't have, to clean yourself up, and which one is preferable over which. Hayu Lefanov, he has two choices, Tzrar v'cheres. Are there a stone or a broken piece of pottery? Rav Huna Amar, Rav Huna says, Mekanech b'tzrar, better to use the stone. V'eino mekanech b'cheres, don't use this broken piece of pottery for two reasons. Either because it's sharp and you might injure yourself, or because you might expose yourself to witchcraft. Rav Chisda Amar, on the other hand, mekanech b'cheres, v'eino mekanech b'tzrar. Now Rashi offers the following explanation as to why Rav Chisda would have preferred a broken piece of pottery over a stone. And Rashi says the following, that this discussion has to do with Shabbos. And what this means is that the cheres has one major advantage over the stone. The stone is undoubtedly muktzah. Again, for Kavod HaBrias, as we discussed at great length yesterday, for the dignity of man, we may have to push aside and trump this halach of muktzah. But if you have another option, then go with the other option. A piece of cheres, even though it's broken off from a larger pot, is still a kli. It still has the status of a utensil. For one of various reasons. Either because it's the rounder part of the original kli cheres, so it has a little bit of a receptacle, you could carry water in it, or even if it's the more flat part, you can use it to cover things. A stone, by definition, is muktzah. So why bother with a stone? Rashi adds another point. The Rav Chisda was not so concerned about the danger element in cheres. So we have these two factors. On the one hand, as we saw in Rav Huna, let's avoid a kli cheres, that broken piece of cheres, because of the danger element. On the other hand, the advantage of the kli cheres is that it still has the status of a kli, and that gives it one up on a tsrar, on a stone. And there seems to be a machlokas here about to what extent is the kli cheres really in actuality dangerous. And Rav Chisda felt it wasn't dangerous. He could be careful about it, make sure that he gets rid of it after he wipes himself so that no witch will get a hold of it, no machshefa. Meisvei, the Gemara has a raya to Rav Chisda against Rav Huna. Hoyu lefan of tzvar v'cheres, he has these two options. Mekaneach, he should wipe himself becheres, with the broken piece of pottery, v'eino mekaneach b'tzror, rather than use a stone. And the Gemara says, tufta de Rav Huna. This is a brisa that you can't get more explicit. The brisa is a clear-cut repetition of the opinion of Rav Chisda, and it's against Rav Huna. However, the Gemara says the following. Perhaps we can reinterpret that brisa. Tirgama means to interpret. Rafram bar Papa Kamei de Rav Chisda Aliva de Rav Huna. Even though it was in the presence of Rav Chisda, Rafram tried to reinterpret the brisa to defend Rav Huna, the intellectual honesty. Biogne Kelim. Why does the brisa prefer the broken off piece of pottery to the tsrar? It's referring to Ogne Kelim. Ogne Kelim, although they may have been broken pieces, but they're not sharp. Why? Because these are the outer rims of the utensil. And if a part of that rim breaks off, it is smooth. Again, it's not always smooth, but that's the case that the Bryce is talking about. In such a case, the Bryce says, you know what? This is a situation in which we can advocate in favor of using a cheres, a broken piece of an earthenware utensil, because our hesitation in using that piece was because it's sharp and it might be dangerous. Here's a case where it doesn't have an element of danger. And therefore, if there's no element of danger, why not use that insofar as it has the same kli, it's still a utensil, rather than be lenient about a stone which is muktzah. In general, though, the brisa would agree that if you had a shard of an earthenware utensil which has a sharp edge to it, then we would prefer to override the law of muktzah to use a stone rather than a sharp edge. And that would support the view of Rav Huna. Hoyulafon of Tzor Vasovim. Now we have another choice to wipe oneself. Either a stone or very sharp leaves. Again, we have a machlokas. This time it's between Rav Chisda and Rav Hemnuna. Chad Amar, according to one opinion, Mekanech b'tzror v'eino mekanech b'asovim. In the case of grass, it is very sharp, it has sharp edges, and that should be avoided. In this case, Rashi says, the Gemara seems to be talking during the weekday, it's not even a Shabbos issue so much. The Gemara wants to know, even during the week, what would be preferable. And although a stone could sometimes be smooth, then we would prefer the stone. The grass sometimes is very, very sharp, and he could really cut himself in that very sensitive area. Chad Omer, according to another opinion, Mekanech basovim v'eino mekanech b'tzror. And the Gemara is going to try to interpret this. I mean, why should he prefer grass, which might be sharp, to the case of a stone? Now, apparently, even the stones that they used to wipe themselves had a little bit of an edge, so to speak, an element of sharpness. And according to the second view, if we can find something that's better and less sharp than a stone, we're in this case grass, which the Gemara is going to interpret why, then that would be preferable. Once again, there are those who interpret this Gemara that we're talking about Shabbos. And even if this grass was detached before Shabbos, we're afraid that if we use grass, then he might come to inadvertently pull out grass from the ground on Shabbos. Mesve, the Gemara challenges the second view, right? The second view that says, I prefer grass. Hamakaneach b'dover sha'or shol letes bo, any flammable substance. Shinov hatachtonos noshros. Flammable substances should be avoided because the teeth will fall out. The teeth, we're referring to those muscles, those three muscles in the rectal area. And the Braisa seems to completely prohibit the use of grass. And yet in the second opinion in our Gemara, we were in favor of using the grass. Lokasha. Habalachim habiyveshim. If you use moist grass, it's very soft, it doesn't have that sharp edge, and there's no danger that he might cut himself and have a negative, dangerous impact on his muscles. But if, on the other hand, it's dry, then the dry piece of grass is very, very sharp sometimes, and it could be dangerous. The Gemara now gives us a few medicinal, or shall we say, health recommendations with regard to the process of eliminating. Hanitzach lefanos vein and nifna. Be careful. If you have an urge to eliminate, you better eliminate. Don't delay it. Why? Because if he needs to relieve himself and he doesn't do so, Rav Chisda, Rav Vina, they both say that it's going to cause something bad. Don't hold on to your waste products in the body. The waste products in the body, if they're not pushed out of the body, then it rots in the body. Chad Omer, according to one opinion, ruach ra shall let this bow. It'll make him have bad breath. V'chad Omer, ruach zuama shall let this bow. He'll have the bad odor of perspiration, and all this is because the waste products are rotting in his body. If he's not careful about going to the bathroom, about excreting his feces. Tanya kimandiyom ruach zuama shol letes bo. In fact, we have a brisa that explicitly supports that opinion, that by delaying elimination, it will affect his body perspiration. Desanya hanitrach lenekavav viochel. One of the worst things is if he eats a meal when he really has to eliminate. And the Gemara is going to give us various recommendations about how to make sure that you can clean out your body before you eat a meal. But if he does so, domel letanur sheisiku al gabi afaro. Imagine you used an oven and you baked your bread or whatever you did in the oven, and now what's left are some of the ashes from that baking. And now he puts something into the oven and he uses the old ashes. And if a person doesn't eliminate when he has to, then basically he's got old ashes in his body, in this equation, in this mashal. Vizui tchilas ruach zuaman. The Brisa says explicitly, this is the beginning of perspirational odor. So the rotting wastes inside his body, Rashi tells us, will be absorbed into the tissues of his body, and that will cause excessive odorous perspiration. What do we do in the following case? Asks the Gemara. Hutzrach lipanos. He needs to relieve himself. Yeno yochel lipanos. And it's just not happening. Omer Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda's recommendation. Yamod v'yeshev, yamod v'yeshev. He should stand up. He should sit down. Stand up and sit down. And this will cause a kind of a pressure on the interior of his large intestines when he stands up and he sits down. It will stimulate the muscles. It's called peristalsis, and it will bring the excrement forward to the rectal orifice, and he'll be able to eliminate. Kind of reminds me a little of a woman who's, you know, has labor, but she's not giving birth. You know, they tell her to stand up, sit down, walk around. Rav Chanan Minarda Omar, he has another recommendation. Yitztalik litzdanim. You know, he should attempt over and over again to try to eliminate. Rav Hun Omar, he has a third recommendation. Yemashmesh bitzror b'yosom makom. Remember yesterday we spoke about mishmush, that he could take a small stone, if he does it carefully, and he can stimulate the rectal opening. Rabbanan amri yasiach daito. Very strange. Rabbanan recommend that he think about something else and distract himself. Omale Rav Acha breder ovle Rav Ashi. He should distract himself. Is kolshkein dechimasiach daito lo mefane. How much more so if he's not focused on trying to eliminate when he has to? He won't be able to relieve himself. It doesn't make any sense. Amalei, what he means is yasiach daito midvar macherim. He should distract himself from all his other thoughts and all his preoccupations and be single-mindedly focused on eliminating. Concentrate on that to the exclusion of any other thoughts. Amar Rabbi Yirmiyahu midifti, and Rav Yirmiya wants to tell a story which will prove that if you stand up and you sit down, it could stimulate the rectal opening. Lididi chazi liahutaya. I saw one of these Arab travelers. Dekom v'yosef, dekom v'yosef. Apparently he was having trouble eliminating. He stood, he sat, he stood, he sat. Adeshofach b'kedera. Like if you have a pot of food, you just pour it out. And nothing holds back. So here also, he was able to pour out all the waste products from his body. Tana Rabbanan nichnas lesudas keva. He's about to sit down for a major meal, and it's very important that he eliminate and clean his body before the meal. Is yahalech? He should walk around before the meal, and that's going to stimulate his elimination process. Now, we have two numbers here in terms of how much he should walk around. We have the number 4 and we have the number 10. So the two different versions about how often you know, how much of a walk he should go on. According to the first version, is Yahalech Eser Pa'omim Shel Arba Amos. He should take 10 walks, each one is 4 Amos. So totally, he's walking 40 Amos, but in 10 different walks. Amrile, but there's another version. Arba Pa'omim, he should take 4 walks, but instead of 4 Amos in each walk, Shel Eser Eser Amos. He should take 4 walks of 10 Amos each, which again totals 40 Amos. V'nifne. And then he should be ready to eliminate. Nichnas v'yeshev v'mkomo. After he eliminates, he sits down. He's ready for a meal. He won't be disturbed in the middle of the meal to have to get up and relieve himself. Now we're in the last Mishnah in Perek HaMotzi Yayin. Cheres. What is the minimum shear of hotzah of earthenware? Kedei litein ben patzim lechavero. What he does is he piles up horizontally one slat of wood on top of another slat of wood, but not all the slats are exactly the same size. So what happens is, if you have a smaller slat on top, it's going to sort of fall into the vacuum, and then it gets warped. So he has to make sure that there's no space, empty space between one slat, the small slat on top, and the larger slat on the bottom. So he takes some piece of pottery, of earthenware, and he fills in the gaps. And that's the shear of Hotzah, according to Tanakama, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Meir Omer, what's the shear for earthenware? What's considered chashuv? Kedei lachtos bo es ha'or. You remember that we had a whole discussion in the second parakira, which is called chitui b'gecholim. You have coals on a fire, but sometimes the coals begin to go down and you have to poke them. So you take a piece of earthenware of a certain size and you poke the coals and the flames go up. Rabbi Yossi Omer, third shita, kedei lekabel bo revius. You've got to be carrying a utensil, an earthenware utensil that has the size of, it's a receptacle that could hold on to a revius of liquid. And Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir are going to argue about a pasuk in Yeshayo and Navi. And this pasuk in Yeshayo and Navi is a castigation of the Jewish people because they lack trust in God. And they rely on the aid of kings, of non-Jewish kings, like, for example, the king of Egypt. And Yeshayo says that they put up a wall of protection. In other words, they put all their faith in a wall. The wall is symbolic of a human protection as opposed to a divine protection. And what they will find is, unfortunately, that the wall is going to fall, shatter into very small pieces. And in order to dramatize this, Yeshayo HaNavi says that even the smallest piece will be completely smashed, be completely destroyed. Okay, now let's go through the pasuk inside. Omer Rabbi Meir, Afal Pishein Raya L'Davar, even though I can't prove my point, that the shear is for the fire, as Rabbi Meir says, you know, a piece of earthenware that stimulates the fire, zecher l'dov, but I can give you some sort of a zecher, meaning a pasuk that does seem to indicate my conclusion. Because what does Yeshayo say? He says, lo yimotze b'mekisoso, he shall not find amongst the pieces, after the wall falls, cheres, even a piece of shard, lachtos eish miyakod. Yakod is the fireplace, and lachtos means to use it as a stick and be mechata b'gecholim, right, to stimulate the fire. So you see that the cheres here, which is earthenware, is being used to pick up the fire. Amalei Rabbi Yossi, Misham Raya. Wait a minute. You read most of the verse, but you didn't read the last part of the verse. And at the end of the pasuk, it says, V'lachsof mayim migeve, which literally translates to scoop up water from a hole. In other words, you won't even find a small piece of earthenware after the wall is shattered to scoop up water. And therefore you see that when the Navi wants to talk about the significance of some small piece, which we won't even find that small piece, he refers to scooping up water, which was Rabbi Yossi's opinion in our Mishnah, that the chashivus is determined by the fact that this piece of cheres could hold on to a revius. Okay, there's a mnemonic device here, but mistabra shiura de Rabbi Yossi nafish. It would seem, at first glance, that Rabbi Yossi is the makil over here, because he's talking about a piece of earthenware that's large enough that it could hold a revius of yayin, or a revius of any liquid. Whereas, if we go back to Rabbi Meir, the Gemara assumes that you don't need such a large piece of pottery in order to stimulate the fire. So the Gemara asks, there's something very strange then when we read the pasuk. Why? Umikra shiura de Rabbi Meir nafish. But if we read the pasuk, it would seem that the shiur of Rabbi Meir is really larger. Why? If you're talking about holding up water, and that's a greater amount, a revius of liquids, and that's a larger measure than that of Rabbi Meir, is lightly, right, literally the curse of Yeshayahu Hanavi when he's castigating the Jewish people that their walls will be shattered and so forth, is b'mana zutra v'hada lightly b'mana rabba. It doesn't make sense that you go from a smaller utensil and then to a larger utensil. Meaning, when you curse somebody, then you go from the lesser curse until you get to the worst curse. And at the end of the pasuk, it speaks about a larger utensil that could hold mayim. That makes no sense. Amar Abaye, Masdisa nami lachtos esh miyakida gdola. Rabbi Meir's measure is indeed larger. And why? Because he's not talking about a small bonfire. Rabbi Meir is talking about a large bonfire. And for a large bonfire, you will need a major piece of earthenware in order to poke the flames and stimulate the fire. Rabbi Yossi Omer Misham Raya. So Rabbi Yossi says, how could you bring a proof when Yeshayahu's curse culminates in the smallest piece that could hold water? Shapir ka'omale Rabbi Yossi the Rabbi Meir. How will Rabbi Meir contend against Rabbi Yossi? Rabbi Meir lomi boy ka'omar. He interprets the pasuk and the curse of Yeshayahu in the following way. Lomi boy, it goes without saying. Midi dechashiv le'inish delolish takach. You won't even find something that is considered significant by people, even something that's not considered significant. In other words, Rabbi Meir says that to stimulate the fire, that's something significant. Everybody who has a bonfire, he needs something to poke the flames. But in terms of carrying liquids, you know, there are many different utensils that he could use to carry the liquids. Hadron Alecha Motzi Yayin, and now we begin the ninth chapter of Shabbos, which is called Rabbi Akiva. Now, just by way of introduction, I have to tell you that if you had an impression that a lot of what we've been doing in Masechta Shabbos is not relevant to Shabbos per se, we've had so much of Tuba Vitara, we've had so much of Kalim, of Olos, we've had medical insights of the Talmud and the issues about danger, a lot of things about therapeutic methods, and we're going to have more of that later in Shabbos. I have news for you. Most of this chapter that we're about to learn has nothing to do with Masechta Shabbos. So we're not yet ready for that turning point where we're, you know, heavy into Masechta Shabbos. This Mishnah that we're about to learn is an analysis of what's called Tumas Masa. Now, what that means is that in certain specific cases, the Torah says that if you carry something without even having any contact with it, but you carry it, and that something has the status of Tumah, then you contract a Tumah which is called Tumas Masa for carrying it. So let's take the following two paradigmic cases of Tumah. One is going to be a Zav or a Nida on the one hand, and the other is going to be Sheretz on the other hand. So let's talk about Sheretz. The Torah says that if a person whose tar has direct contact with a sheretz, then he contracts tumas sheretz. If, on the other hand, he carries a sheretz, but he doesn't have any direct contact with it, he's not tame. Now let's go back to Nida and Zava. In the case of Nida and Zava, there's such a thing called tumas masa, that if a person carries a Nida or a Zav, in those two cases, we'll see about Nevela in a few minutes, a dead carcass of an animal, so that person contracts Tumas Masa. This, despite the fact that he has no direct contact. Now, the Rabbanan came along and based on a pasuk in Yeshayahu Novi came to the conclusion that when it comes to Avodah Zarah, like an idol, we have to go very, very far away. Stay far away from an idol. And in order to guarantee that, the Rabbanan instituted a Tumah Dirabbanan, a rabbinic Tumah. And that will apply, and this is according to everyone, if you have direct contact with an idol, and B, and this is only Rabbi Akiva's Shita, although we'll have Machlokas Amoraim about the Chachamim, but Rabbi Akiva goes on record as saying that if you carry an idol, even if you don't have direct contact with it, then you contract Tumah. On Rabbi Akiva, Minayin, how do I know, La Avodah Zarah, that if you are dealing with an idol, Shemitama, this Avodah Zarah, generates Tumah Vimasa, by carrying it, kinnida, and the Rabbanan gave it that high, a high profile status of a nida, which has that unique tumah of tumas masa, as opposed to sheretz, shenemar, because the pasuk tells us in Yeshayahu Anavi, tizrem, you should throw them away, meaning the idols, kimodava, like a nida, just like a nida has to stay away from a husband, is so too we have to stay far away from an idol. Say tomar lo, as if to say, speak to the idol and say, get out of here. My nida, why did the pasuk in Yeshaya compare avodah zarah to a nida? My nida mitami b'masa, because nida is a very strict tumah. And even if you don't have contact, but you carry the nida, you contract tumah, and that's called tumas masa. Af avodah zarah mitama b'masa. So too, if you carry an idol, then you contract tumas masa, like the case of a nida. And again, all this is the Rabbanan, and the pasuk itself is what's called an asmachta. Sometimes the Rabbanan will find a verse in Tanakh in order to sort of hang their peg on that verse. Tanan Hasam. So Gemara quotes a Mishnah in Avodah Zarah. Mishaya Beso Somuch Li Avodah Zarah. Now, what happens is the following. A Jew and a non-Jew could build two, each one respectively, a house next to each other. and they could share one wall. Right, so the Jew has three walls plus one wall. The guy has three walls plus that same wall, and he shares it with a Jew. That's fine. But in our case of the Mishnah, what happened is this guy went ahead and he converted his house, which he built with one adjoining wall to the Jewish house, into a monastery. V'nafal. And now this common wall falls. So again, it was okay initially. There was nothing wrong with the Jewish action of sharing a wall with a guy. Fine. But now, that wall is a wall of a monastery because the guy converted it into a monastery. Is Osir Livnoso. You're not allowed to rebuild that wall that fell. Why? Because in doing so, you would be building a monastery, so to speak. Right? The monastery now has only three walls, and it needs a fourth wall. So you are actually benefiting the temple for Avodah Zarah if you restructure that wall. So Ketzad Yaseh, what should he do? He's got three walls. Obviously, that's not going to cut the mustard for a house. Kones l'toch shalo arba amos. Ubone. Now that he knows that next door to him is a temple for idolatry, he has to be marchik, he has to distance himself a minimum of four amos. Now, just to touch on the tip of the iceberg, what is four amos in halacha, in the entire halachic universe? Four amos in halacha is called a makom, a place. Anything less than four amos is not called a makom. And this has many repercussions in many different areas of halacha, especially in Hilchas Shabbos and Hilchas Erevin. Four amos. He needs now to separate himself from a makom avodah zarah. And how does he do so? He creates this distance of four amos, and that's a separate makom. So when he builds his fourth wall, four amos away from the monastery, he's got a different makom between him and the temple for Avodah Zarah. And now we turn to Daf Pei Beis Amid Beis. Hoyesh shalo v'shel Avodah Zarah. What happens with regard to the situation where the ground beneath the wall is a partnership between himself, he has private ownership, but so does the monastery. Used to be the guy in a private place, now it's a monastery. So in such a case, nidon mechtza al mechtza. We're going to consider it as if the ground beneath the wall is half owned by the Jew and half owned by the monastery. And the implication is that when he has to measure his four cubits, you remember he has to be marchik, he has to separate himself four amos away, then he's got to start from half of the distance on the other side of the wall. Because he's got half of that distance that belongs to the monastery. So his harchaka now has to be, let's say for example, if two amos worth belong to the guy, he's going to have to start from the end of that two amos, and he has to be marchik another four amos. Then the Mishnah says, Avona v'eitzav aforov mitamim kisheretz. Okay, this is all the Chachamim, and we'll soon see Rabbi Akiva. But according to the Chachamim, everything that fell from this wall that is common before it fell, right? It was common to both the Jew and the temple, and we call it the stones and the pieces of wood. And the offer, the earth, anything that was part of this wall, is mitamim kisheretz. It has the status in tuma of a sheretz. Now remember, as we said earlier, a sheretz is mitamim b'maga, with at direct contact, but not with masa. So if he would carry any of this wood or stones or offar, he would not become tummy unless he had contact with these things. And where do we know that the tumah of avodah zarah is equated with that of asheretz? Shenemar, because the Torah says regarding our idols, shaketz tishaktsenu. So this is a pasuk in the beginning of Devarim, and the Torah says you should abominate avodah zarah. Now the word abomination, which is sheketz, is the same word, at least in terms of its meaning, as sheretz. And the Torah went out of its way to describe idols as sheketz in order to create this equation, this analogy to shrotzim. Sheketz and shrotzim. And if that be the case, then the sheretz, or in this case, that which is equated to the sheretz, will only generate tumah through maga, but not through masa, not through carrying it. So once again, if a person carries this, these leftover pieces of the wall, which was avodah zarah, then he's not tomei. Rabbi Akiva omer no. Rabbi Akiva has a different analogy. We should equate avodah zarah not with sheretz, but rather with neither. Shenema, as we saw in our Mishnah, tizreim kemo dava. You should cast it aside like a nida. Ma nida metama b'masa, af avodah zarah metama b'masa. So we clearly have a machlokas here in this Mishnah between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim about the status of an idol as far as tumas masa is concerned. According to the Rabbanon, we're going to equate an idol with tumas sheretz, and therefore it's not mitami b'masa, it's only mitami b'maga. According to Rabbi Akiva, we're going to equate the idol with a nida, and just like a nida is mitama b'masa, so too an idol is mitami b'masa. Now, what we're about to embark upon now is a machlokas between Rabbah and Rabbi Lozar, which are two Amoraim that are going to debate the scope of the machlokas between the Chachamim and Rabbi Akiva. Most of what we're going to do today, in the short time that we have left, is to focus on Rabbah. So tomorrow, Mirtz Hashem, maybe today we'll have an introduction, but tomorrow we'll focus on Rabbi Lozar. Omar Rabbah, Rabbi says that Tizreim di Omar Kra, when the Torah says cast aside Avodah Zarah, what does this teach us? Nachrinu minoch kizar, make it foreign to you, like an alien, like a stranger. Tsei tomar lo, tell the idol, go far away. He kanes al tomarlo. Never invite an idol to enter. In other words, what the Tanakh, what Yeshaya is trying to teach us, is that we have to distance ourselves completely from an idol. And we should say, go away, cast him out, and we should never invite him in. Don't come any close to it. This is what's called an asmachta, and the Rabbanon, based on this asmachta, this idea which is inherent in the Pasuk, in Yeshaya, is meant to instruct us to impose tumah on an idol, and that's the way we keep it far away, and not only tumah on an idol, but the most severe type of tumah that we know of, and that is tumas masa, that even if you carry the idol, and you don't have direct contact with it, that's also included under Tsei Tomar Lo, and you generate Tumah. Fine. So far, Rabbah has given us what we know. I mean, he's explaining it very beautifully, but there are no debates about this. Now Rabbah goes further with a bit of a revolution, which Rabbi Lozar later on is going to reject. V'yomer Rabbah, b'masa, as far as Tumas Masa is concerned, Kuliyama lo pliyi de mitama. Even the Rabbanan agree that carrying an idol will generate Tumas Masa. Da iskash linida. The Rabbanan are not going to deny the Pasuk in Yeshaya, which tells you that the idol is like a nida, cast it aside, and don't invite it in. So then what is the machlokas in the Mishnah, in the Mishnah Avodah Zarah, between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Akiva? Ki pligi be Evan Misama. I'll explain what Evan Misama is in a minute. Rabbi Akiva Savar Kinida. Ma nida mitama be Evan Misama. Af Avodah Zarah mitama be Evan Misama. For Rabbanan Savri Kisheretz. Ma sheretz lo mitami be evin misama, af avodah zara lo mitama be evin misama. Now we've spoken about the chumrah, the stringency of nida in Hilchas Tumah, that she generates tumas masa without maga. But now we have another chumrah that the Torah imposes upon a nida and also on a zav, and that's called evin misama. Now, in the Masifta, which I have here in front of me, he tells us about Evan Misama. And first he explains that the word, the etymology of Evan Misama, has to do with that stone in Sefer Daniel. You remember that they had a whole... the enemies of Daniel... They had a whole libel against him that he denied and violated the decree of the king. Anyway, he was thrown into the lion's den. And the Pasuk in Daniel describes the Evan, the stone that they used to close up the lion's den, so that, you know, Daniel would not be able to escape. He'd certainly be swallowed up by the lions. And then, of course, Hashem did a great miracle. So that's the Evan that's described in Sefer Daniel. And now, the Evan was lifted up in order to close the opening of the cave at the time of Daniel, the den. And it was lifted up on Yesedos. Yesedos means that there were sort of poles, vertical poles, and that would hold up the Evan and keep it in place. That's called an Evan Misama. Any stone that is lifted from the ground and being held up is called an Evan Misama. And here's the Chiddush of a Nida, and the same applies to a Zav. The case is that under this stone, there's airspace, and there are utensils that are under the stone. The Zav, or the Nida, sit on top of this stone. Notice, they have no contact whatsoever with the utensils below the stone. Not only that, even the stone itself has no contact with these utensils. And the Torah says that the utensils, hamunochim, hakelim hamunochim b'chalal, shetachas ha'evan tmeim. Even though the evan ain't no gas klal b'kelim shetachteha, there's no direct contact between the stone and the utensils below. So, im yoshav hazav, or nida also, al ha'evan, timei es hakelim shetachas ha'evan, af shelo hizizom klal. And this is all derived from a pasuk in the parash of Zav, vayikra tesvav, kol anugeya b'chol ha'shayiyah tachtov yitamei ad ha'orev. Now, Tumas Evan Masa Nemra bi Arba Ufanim. There are four different scenarios of Tumas Evan Misama. Number one, that was the case that we discussed before. The Zav or the Zava sit on top of the Evan, and there are utensils below the Evan. All those utensils contract Tuma. Number two, a Tahar, who's not Tumas, sits on top of the Evan, but immediately prior, or sometime prior, a Zav or a Zava had rested or sat on top of this stone. And the Evan is now going to be the conduit to transfer Tuma over to the Tahar. Number three, if a Zav or a Nida sit on top of this Evan, and a Tahar puts his finger or his foot underneath the stone, he stretches it into that airspace, he becomes Tomei as if he's carrying the Nida or the Zav. That's called Tumas Masa, which we said before is unique to a Zav and a Nida. So he's like a Noseas HaZav. Number four, if a Zav or a Nida put their finger or their foot underneath this Evan Misama, and there are Kalim on top of the Evan, then those Kalim contract Tuma. So there are four different halachas of Tuma Vitara that are all included under this hierarchy called Evan Misama. Rabbi Akiva Savar Kin Nida. Rabbi Akiva takes the equation between an idol and Nida to the next level. Man Nida Metama Bevin Misama, Favodazar Metama Bevin Misama. For Rabbanan Savri, no. The Torah compared an idol to a Sheretz. Is Ma Sheretz Lo Metami Bevin Misama? Is Afavodazar Lo Metama Bevin Misama? So the Gemara immediately asks, "Ul Rabbi Akiva l'may hilchasa iskish l'sheretz? Why did the Torah then compare a sheretz to the idol? Right, and in the idol it says sheketz shaketz tishaktsenu. What do we derive from that hekesh between an idol and a sheretz? Limisham sheha. So again, we're not talking about the idol itself." We're talking about various utensils that were used to give honor to the idol. And those utensils are called Tashmishi Avodah Zorah. And their status is equal to that of a Sheretz, which means if you come in contact directly with any of those Mishamshim, those service items, then you contract Tuma. However, there's no Tuma in the case of Mishamshim, of Masa or Evan Misama. The Rabbanim l'may hilchasa iskish l'nida. What did the Rabbanim gain from the equation that the Torah equates in Yeshaya, an idol to Nida? L'masa. Because again, according to Rabbah, even the Chachamim agree that an idol is metami b'masa if you carry it. So now the Gemara asks for Luksha Rachmana l'nevela. Why didn't the Torah just compare? That would be the easiest thing, an idol to nevela, to the dead carcass of an animal that died without shechita, because that nevela has exactly the same status of what we want to get to, according to Rabbah, namely, on the one hand, it's mitami b'masa, it has the same unique tumas masa like a nida. On the other hand, it's not mitame be'even misame, which according to Chachamim is exactly the status of an idol. Ein Achinami, the Gemara says that analogy would have been perfect. Ella, but the Gemara wanted to give another din. Ma nida eina le'evarim, afavodazor eina le'evarim. So let's say a woman who was a nida had an amputation and a limb has been amputated. That limb is not mitame b'masa. And avodazor, if you would break off one of the limbs of this idol, that limb would not be metame in masa. It would be the same status as a sheretz, and it would only be metame with maga. We'll just finish it up here. Ela ha deboi Rav Chama bar Guria avodazor yeshna levarim o eno levarim. He didn't know whether an idol would be metame if you remove one of the arms or legs of the idol. Tifshot le mehad de rabbanon eino le varim. You see from the rabbanon, they derive from the equation to nida that a limb, so to speak, of an idol is not metame. So you see clearly that there's an answer to Rav Chama's question. So the answer is, Rav Chama bar Guria liba de Rabbi Akiva boila. His suffix was only according to Rabbi Akiva because Rabbi Akiva uses the hekesh between an idol and a nida to teach the law that is Tumas Masa and that is Evan Hamasama. So he doesn't have that equation to teach us that an idol is not metame with its limbs. So this finishes what I call part one of the sugya, and that's Rabba's understanding. Both the Chachamim and Rabbi Akiva agree that an idol is metame b'masa, based on the equation to nida, and the machlokus is whether it's metame like a nida b'even mesame. And then, Rabbi Numa number two, we'll pick up Mishnah tomorrow, is Rabbi Eliezer. So let's just make a note of where we got to. And we're up to Rabbi Eliezer. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 lines up before the end of Daf Pei Beis, Amid Beis. Okay then?